You know, on the show, we have told stories about a lot of different products. Cars, Swiss cheese, socks, those little tiny metal washers you use and screws that are made in China. But there is this one big product category we have never talked about. And that's because this product is one that is incredibly divisive. It is incredibly emotional to talk about. And that product is a gun.
I think you can get a real sense for this in a press conference that President Obama held at the White House a couple months ago. Maybe you saw this. He was talking about the mass shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut.
And from every family who never imagined that their loved one would be taken from our lives by a bullet from a gun.
And he's crying, and he has to wipe away the tears.
Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad.
The president was standing next to the families of shooting victims, and he was talking about things that the White House could do to reduce gun violence, including one thing about gun safety.
We need to develop new technologies that make guns safer. If we can set it up so you can't unlock your phone unless you got the right fingerprint, why can't we do the same thing for our guns?
Wherever you stand on guns, this seems like a pretty fair question. There are lots of products that are dangerous, cars, for instance, and we try and make those safer all the time. We try to sort of overcome human weaknesses. So cars have seat belts and airbags, they have anti-lock brakes, they even have a new feature that'll keep you in your lane. So why don't we have a gun that does essentially the same thing, overcomes human weaknesses, human mistakes? Say a gun that can only be fired by its intended user, some kind of electronic safety mechanism.
Yeah, why don't we have that? Well, the answer seems to be that guns are just not like other products.
Hello, and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Robert Smith.
I'm Joel Rose,
who is NPR's Northeast correspondent. He brought the story to us today. Give it to him.
Today on the show, the man who tried to give his customers what he thought they wanted, a smarter gun.
A safer gun. And he ended up paying a big price.
Planet Money and the following message are made possible by Squarespace. Whether you own a small business or just need a professional portfolio, you should showcase your passion. Squarespace has the tools and website templates that you need to capture every detail of what makes your passion worth pursuing. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/planetmoney. You should.
The man who tried to bring a safer gun to market is not what you would think of as like a typical gun guy. I met him for lunch, fancy restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. Seems like a guy who does not eat lunch at his desk very often. His name is Donald Zilka.
I didn't own a gun. I live in New York City. I don't own a gun in New York City.
Zilka grew up in Manhattan and he went to Wesleyan. He looks like an investment banker because he is an investment banker.
In 1994, Zilka decided he wanted to try his hand at running a company. So he bought one, a company that was in trouble but had a long respected history, Colt.
Colt, as in the Colt 45.
The Colt 45 revolver. If you have ever seen a Western movie, you have seen the Colt 45 revolver.
Iconic American gun company, been around for 180 years. Its early advertising slogan was "God created man, Samuel Colt made them equal."
But Colt was going through a lot of trouble. They were in bankruptcy. And Zilka thought he could turn the company around by doing what Colt used to be great at hundreds of years ago, innovation, making new products that people want.
I was doing something that I thought was innovative in an industry that hadn't done too much innovation in a long time. It was going to improve things in this business.
What Donald Zilka wanted to make was a smart gun. This is a gun that can only be fired by its owner. It's an idea that had been bouncing around for a long time. So he said, let's try to build one. Bring it to market. This is just what we need.
Initially, I thought this would be something that could be adapted over 20, 30 years. And everybody would say, wow, this is a good way to own a handgun. You know, it was a safe way to own a handgun.
Imagine you're a parent going into a gun store. There's two guns side by side. One that anyone could pull the trigger and fire, including your children if they got a hold of it. Next to that, a smart gun that if your kids picked up while you're out of the house, pulled the trigger, nothing would happen. Like a lot of people would pick the smart gun.
And Zilka figures the gun would also appeal to law enforcement because the bad guys couldn't pick up your gun and use it against you, which happens sometimes.
Or it would appeal to collectors, people who like high-tech items.
Yeah, early adopters. Colt figured the potential market for smart guns was in the millions.
Yeah, if they could actually build one, because this was the first obstacle. I know you're thinking these days, oh, electronics can do anything, but this is the 1990s. This is when electronics and computers crashed all the time. They were unreliable. And as Zilka points out, guns and electronics, not a great combination.
Every time you shoot a gun, there's an explosion. So, you know, could you calibrate, you know, the fingerprints, you know, properly so you could use it?
The iPhone has a little fingerprint thing on it.
But it doesn't, you don't basically throw it on the ground every once as hard as you can and pick it up and see if it works. When you're shooting a bullet, it's a little different.
Zilka put the company's best engineers on the problem. And they looked at it and they said, okay, what we need is some kind of electronic device that the owner can wear or have in their pocket, like an electronic key of some sort that can communicate wirelessly with the gun. So if you have this device, you can fire the gun. If you don't, if somebody steals your gun, they can't use it.
So they looked around and said, hey, this thing actually exists. It is a key. It's a car key. Here, I have one in my pocket.
This was super high tech back in the 1990s. It's that little lock button that if you push, boop, boop, you know, unlocks your car door.
So the engineers rigged up a prototype and they showed it to Donald Zilka. It was basically a gun with some electronics in it and a wristband for the owner to wear.
If it was far away, it wouldn't shoot. And if it was close enough, it would shoot.
What did you feel at that moment?
That we had accomplished something, that we'd actually done something. But it was, in a sense, a science experiment.
He was the new Samuel Colt, innovator. First problem solved. It looked doable.
But then Zilka's plan started to run into some trouble. Not like technological trouble, but people trouble. And from kind of an unexpected source, the gun control community, the people who are always complaining about how many accidents and shootings there are in this country, these are the people that Zilka figured would love the smart gun.
Quite the contrary, they were much more vocal about how against this concept they were, how they thought it was a horrible thing, you know, that people shouldn't own guns, period.
But that makes no sense. I mean, you were coming up with a safer gun. They want guns to be safer. It doesn't make any sense to me why they wouldn't embrace what you were doing.
Oh, it makes perfect sense to me. It's an absolute.
So, in other words, a safe gun is still a gun?
Still a gun. Somebody can shoot it.
Next on the CBS Evening News, why new gun control measures could put millions more guns on the streets.
Gun control advocates came out hard against the smart gun in a CBS News story from 2000.
Critics like Josh Sugarman now worry people will think guns are safe enough for any home.
One survey found that 35% of people who never consider buying a handgun would consider buying a smart gun.
This was the worry that some gun control advocates had, that smart guns would encourage more people to own guns, which I kind of get how that could happen. I mean, I personally would never buy a gun. I have kids. My wife would hate it. I live in New York City. But if there were a gun that were really safe and smart, I could see at least considering it. Sugarman was arguing that smart guns would simply lead to more guns, and more guns just lead to more deaths.
And in the 1990s, gun control advocates felt like they had the upper hand. Cities were suing the big gun manufacturers, including Colt, trying to put them out of business. And some gun control advocates thought they could ban handguns altogether.
They thought they could win. They thought this was the moment for gun control in America.
Now, not all gun control people opposed smart guns, but some of them, like Josh Sugarman, who you just heard, did.
He wrote editorials in the New York Times, the Washington Post, urging people not to settle for quote-unquote half measures like smart guns. We reached out to Josh Sugarman. By the way, he declined to comment.
At Colt, Donald Zilka saw this opposition to his plan to make a safer gun. But he figured this is something he can deal with because the real opportunity, the real market for a smart gun is gun owners.
Sure.
And people who might be convinced to become gun owners.
So tell me what you're doing.
I'm loading a magazine.
To talk to some gun owners, I went to Blue Line Tactical Supply and Shooting Sports in Westchester, just north of New York City. It's a nondescript building by the side of the road, but you go inside and they've got all kinds of guns. Little guns, big guns.
I love that technical term, big guns.
There's no other word for it when you see the AR-15. This is just a big gun. This is where I met Steve Albanese. He is definitely a gun guy. His business card actually says Gun Whisperer. What are we looking at here?
We're looking at a Smith & Wesson revolver. It's a model 327.
Before he worked at Blue Line, Albanese was a New York City police officer for 30 years. And remember, police were one of the groups that Donald Zilka thought might actually want to buy smart guns. But Albanese remembers thinking when smart guns were getting discussed for the first time in the 90s, electronics, a gun, wristbands, it all just made him nervous. Because it was his job to make sure that the NYPD's guns fired when they were supposed to.
Our job was to make sure that when the officer needed his gun, it worked. In a critical situation, when he pulled out that firearm and had to either defend himself or defend someone else, that at that critical moment, that gun was going to do what it was supposed to do, which was fire. I've had cops tell me that their worst nightmare is getting involved in a situation, pulling out that gun, pulling the trigger, and hearing it go click.
All that police training to respond immediately, the stress of the moment, the decision to pull the trigger to protect yourself or someone else, and then click, nothing.
So cops clearly are going to take some convincing. But Donald Zilka at Colt thinks there is still this big potential market for smart guns, and it's gun owners, gun enthusiasts. Remember, Donald Zilka is not a gun guy, but he goes around and talks to people who are. The NRA, the National Rifle Association.
I think I spoke to some of the leaders, and I don't want to mention any names, on the manufacturing side and also at the NRA, who are actually very straightforward, not at all threatening. Just look, Donald, if you do this, these are the possible unintended consequences that might come out of this.
Unintended consequences. Some of the people at the NRA saw the smart gun as a backdoor to tougher gun control. It was like in cars. Somebody invents an airbag, and then all of a sudden the government requires every car to have airbags. They thought the same thing would happen with guns. Once a smart gun was on the market, they worried, it would only be a matter of time before the government tried to make smart gun technology mandatory.
And it was around this time, 1998, the NRA had its annual convention in Philadelphia. And we talked to Alan Rice, who was there. He's the vice president of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. He noticed these flyers that were circulating that said, basically, Colt is backing smart guns, and the government might want to make them mandatory. Don't buy Colts.
Ooh, a boycott.
It was very grassroots. It wasn't organized. It wasn't like the NRA or one of the other smaller gun organizations. It was a bunch of people who were just fed up. They felt that this company that had been around for over 100 years was betraying their customers.
Rice says there was so much anger about Colt and smart guns that gun owners talked openly about boycotting the company. Think about that. Gun people going after a gun company.
Donald Zilka's big smart gun plan was falling apart. The gun control side, they didn't like it because it was a gun. Cops were worried it wouldn't work. On the pro-gun activist side, some people were worried that this would become the only kind of gun they could buy.
I hadn't totally fully understood the culture.
Still, Colt presses on. The company figures if people can just see this thing and see that it works, there will be a market for it. People will become convinced.
It's the spring of 1999, 5 years after Zilka bought Colt. The company is ready to show its newest gun to the world, a smart gun prototype.
Colt decides to show the gun first to reporters from the Wall Street Journal. They've been pushing to get a look, and Colt says, okay, come up to Connecticut, we'll give you the first look.
They were feeling really confident that they had finally got this technology down.
Vanessa O'Connell was a reporter at the Wall Street Journal at the time, and she went to Connecticut. The CEO is there. This is the guy Zilka had hired to run the company. And O'Connell interviews the CEO for a while in his office.
Then it's a big moment. Engineer walks into the room carrying this state-of-the-art smart gun prototype, the Colt Z40. Now, from the outside, it looks like any regular handgun. But the difference is in the wristband. If you're not wearing the wristband, the gun is not supposed to fire. So the CEO puts on this whole show. He sets aside the wristband and tries the gun without wearing it. He pulls the trigger and nothing happens. I mean, that's what it's supposed to do. Nothing is supposed to happen if you're not wearing the wristband. Then
the CEO put the wristband on and pulled the trigger again, and it didn't shoot. Just silence.
You had come all this way to see this gun.
That's right.
And it didn't work.
That's right.
This is exactly what Steve Albanese, the NYPD officer, was talking about. What gives police officers nightmares. The gun has to work. First time, every time.
The engineers at Colt had been testing the smart gun earlier in the day. And Vanessa O'Connell from the Wall Street Journal says the team didn't seem alarmed or anything. They just told her, oh, yeah, of course, it needs some time to cool off.
It needed some rest, apparently. It had to be taken back to the engineer's lab, get a little bit of rest, and it came back. The engineer returned with the gun, and it did fire. The CEO and others at Colt were really big believers in their technology. His message was basically, we've been testing this thing, it was working, and here this was a little snafu. But you can imagine what was going through my mind at the time. If you have a gun that is supposed to shoot when you need it to shoot, and it's not going to shoot, you have a big problem.
A very big problem. The story ran on page one of the Wall Street Journal, and the smart gun that didn't fire was right at the top. The gun that wouldn't shoot. Later that year, Colt quietly pulled the plug on smart gun research.
Guns are not like any other product. Looking back, Zilka says he was naive about that. What would you say the moral of the story would be? What should we take? What should we learn from this story?
My lesson is that I don't want to be involved in the middle of a regulatory bun fight. And that's really what it is.
Bun fight. Yeah, I had to look that up, too. Basically, it means a very heated argument that is important to the participants, but not to anyone else.
Wait, what happened to the prototypes? Did you just put them in a safe somewhere?
Yes.
Where are they now?
At Colt.
A few years after Colt gave up, New Jersey passed a law. It was exactly the law that some gun owners were worried about. It said as soon as smart guns go on sale anywhere in the United States, gun stores in New Jersey are required to sell only smart guns within 3 years.
Donald Zilka sold his stake in Colt a few years ago. It's been a decade now since this whole battle played out, and a lot of things have happened since then. The technological problems seem to be basically solved. A smart gun was actually brought to market in Europe.
And gun owners like Steve Albanese, the gun whisperer, the former cop, still has his concerns, but he does see a world where smart guns could happen.
Well, you know what it is? It's technology. Technology is moving forward. And will it have some application? Yeah, it probably will have some. Will it be good for everybody? Probably not. But at some point, you're going to find an end user that says, that's exactly what I want. And, you know, things may take off. That ball may start rolling downhill.
It just needs someone to give the initial push, to sort of, like, show the money and say, like, we would buy this thing. And in fact, that person, that end user, might be the government of the United States of America. President Obama put out a call for the military, the FBI, and Homeland Security to look into, to at least consider how they might be able to buy new smart guns.
If the government decides that it wants smart guns, that would be one very big customer.
Let us know what you thought of today's show. We are Planet Money at npr.org, or you can find us on Twitter at Planet Money. I'm at Radio Smith.
I'm at NPR Joel. Special thanks to Doug Overberry and Josh Horwitz.
And to Nick Fountain, who produced today's show. Now that you're finished listening to Planet Money, you should listen to more Planet Money. But after you are completely tired of listening to Planet Money, may I suggest NPR's newest podcast. It's fantastic. It is called Embedded. It is led by Kelly McEvers, the host of All Things Considered. And it's really a great chance to sit in one story. In each episode, a reporter goes to a place where news is happening and embeds there, sits there and feels what the story is like. It's called Embedded. You can find it on iTunes or the many places you find podcasts. I highly recommend it. I'm Robert Smith.
I'm Joel Rose.
Thanks for listening.